First thing we sing every day, Sangsara Dava Nala Lidha Loka. What does that mean? Can anyone say what it means? Yeah, it specifically refers to people who are oppressed by the forest fire of material existence. Now, what does Sangsara Dava, what does that mean? Alright, let's get the next one. What does Nalalidha Loka mean? Nalalidha Loka, what does it mean? Really? What does Nala mean? Nala means what?
Nala means suffering.
Does it? Dava anal means dava, anala means fire. Nala, I don't know what it means. So if you sing Sangsara Dava Nala Lira Loka, it doesn't mean anything. Maybe something nala, a drain or something like that. But that's not the intended meaning. So it should be continuous. Sangsara Dava Nala. Keep your hands away from your mouth. Go and wash your hands. Some you can break up, but others you can't. It becomes meaningless. So similarly, Sri Vigrahara Dhana Nityanana, it's an incomplete statement. Nityanana Shringara, Sri Vigrahara Dhana Nityanana Shringara. What does that mean? Be good to learn what it means. You sing it every morning. No, this particular. Sri Vigraha means? Sri Vigrahara Dhana means worship of the deity. So, if we sing Sri Vigrahara, stop, Dhana Nityana, then it becomes meaningless. So you have to sing it continuously. Not stopping in the middle. We'll sing Sri Vigrahara Dhana Nityana, and then there's a stop, because Nana is a different word to the next word, Shringara. But it'd be good to learn what you're singing also. Alright, you can come and sit here, not with your back to Prabhupada. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Vishnu Sahasranam 551. Veda. Oh, it's Vedha. Vedha, sorry. It's not Veda. Veda is Shastra, but this is in English that would be spelled V-E-D-H long A. So Vedha. It's a different meaning altogether. Different meanings are given here. The first meaning given by the commenting acharyas is that he is the provider, he who provides what we need. Nityo nityanam chaitanas chaitananam eko bahunam vidathati kaman. There is one eternal among the many eternals, conscious living beings, who is the provider to the many. That means there are so many living beings, he is unique in so many ways. That's why there's Vishnu Sahasranam, because he's unique in so many ways. Each name describes different unique qualities of him. This particular stanza from Kathopanishad describes him as the one who provides the needs, whatever is desired and needed, by all the different, by all the other living beings. So this sense of Krishna being the provider is already covered in Vishnu Sahasranam in names like Bharata, which means who sustains. So included in sustenance is providing the needs. Vidhata, the one who, it's not exactly the same. Vidhata means who makes arrange, just like providence is the usual translation. Providence, destiny, luck, kismat, as it would be said in modern Urdu. Bhuta Brit, the maintainer of all living beings. Sharira Brit, who maintains the body, all the bodies. That's one meaning of Sharira Brit. As we go more and more into Vishnu Sahasranam, we'll find that the different names, the meanings of them are already covered in previous names. But there's always some subtle difference. And it's always good to discuss again and again the qualities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by which He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and by which we are very happy to bow our heads at His lotus feet, and at the lotus feet even of His servants. He's so great that even His servants are worshipable. Now, Srila Prabhupada would often note that He provides even to non-devotees. Generally, it's considered a father will maintain for his own children. Krishna is the father of all living beings. Aham bija prada pita. He is the father of all living beings. So He provides for all, even the rebellious ones. The rebellious ones are so ungrateful that they don't recognize that this is all being given by Him. He provides for, as Prabhupada would often say, for the elephants. Prabhupada said the elephants in the jungle, they eat tons of food. They eat huge amounts, elephants. And the ant needs one little grain of sugar. Krishna arranges for both, whatever they need, for the humans also. Srila Prabhupada criticized the prayer that Lord Jesus spoke. They give us this day our daily bread. He said, well, Srila Prabhupada would say, well, it's good to recognize that God is giving our daily bread or our daily food, but we shouldn't have to pray every day. It shows, one thing, it shows some lack of faith that you have to pray every day. Are you going to feed me today? Are you going to feed me today? Are you going to feed me today? Elsewhere in the New Testament, it's recorded that Jesus had said, when He called people to come and join Him, just He called some fishermen, that He saw them, they were just at the shore of the sea. You leave your nets and come and follow Me. And they said, well, who will look after our family? And Jesus said that, well, the birds, they don't do any work. They don't plow the land. They don't do, but God provides for them. So will He not provide for you, who are His servants? Yoga kshemam vahame aham ananyas chintayanto mam ye janah pariupasate tesham nityabhyuktanam yoga kshemam vahamyaham. For those who are completely absorbed in Krishna, in thoughts of Him, He provides what they need, which includes minimally food, whatever they need. Provide, of course, the basic needs, as we know from the politicians, who the roti kapra makan, the food, clothing, and shelter. These are the basic needs. And by the nature's arrangement, which means Krishna's arrangement, it's all there. For us, maybe you have to do a little work to. Even the birds, they don't work exactly, but they have to find out where is the food. They'll look here and then they go and pick it up and gather it. Now, Krishna provides everything. Vidadhati iti vedaha, that is the derived. The who gives who what we need is called Vedha. He's the provider, but to relate with Him in this way is not a very high level. He gives us what we want, therefore we like Him. He gives us food. He gives us power. The people will pray that God bless America so we can bomb all those people in Iraq and whoever else doesn't like us, or we don't like them. So we pray to God to provide what we need for our material sense gratification. That is not love. Even in this material world, if one relates to one's parents just, oh, you give this, give that. I like my father. He gives me this, he gives me that. That's not a very high level. It's just that we appreciate the Father because He gives us all objects that we desire. Of course, we shouldn't be ungrateful. We should be grateful for that. But at the same time, that's not the only function of God, is to provide what we need for our miserable bodies. This is often understood, misunderstood also, in the Abrahamic religions. That means Judaism, Christianity, and Islam in chronological order. They have the idea that, well, God gave us everything, so it's all for us to enjoy. That you can also find in some Karma Kanda. People, followers of the Vedas, where they the motive to enjoy this world. God made everything, so it's all for us to. That's why He made it, for us to enjoy. Well, in one sense, that's true, but we should at the same time understand that it's illusory enjoyment. This creation was made to facilitate the rebellious living beings, to facilitate their desires, and at the same time to coax them. To coax means to persuade gradually. Gradually and gently, to coax them into understanding that this world is miserable and surrendering to Krishna. But if we just think that it's just for me to enjoy. God gave us everything. So, God made the animals, so we should kill them. And we'll eat them. Because God made them. Otherwise, why did He make them? I've heard this from Krishna. Why did He make the animals? If the only reason they're there is for us to enjoy them. So, it should be understood properly. In another meaning is the doer. Particularly of auspicious things. The doer, everyone's a doer. That's a whole discussion in the opening chapters of Bhagavad Gita. that Arjuna wanted to stop doing his duty. But everyone has to do something. And even Krishna, he's not obliged to work. Name karma nilimpanti. Name karma phale spriya. He says, I'm not obliged to work, nor do I desire the results of acting, but still, I work to set an example for others. So everyone's doing something. And whatever Krishna does is auspicious. It's all meant for the welfare of others. So already the idea of Krishna as the doer has come. The name Kriti, still to come, is the name Mahakarma. And another meaning of Vidha is the creator. And this idea of the creator has already come in several names, most prominently or directly in the name Srashta, which means the same, you just said that, the Srishti Karta. That's the commonly used word, but another word is Srashta, which means the creator. How are you going to translate that? Srashta means Srashta. I'm translating it, but you, you don't need to translate. It becomes more confusing if you translate that part. So other names which give this idea of the creator, Bhutakrit, who makes everything, Bhuta Bhavana, who makes everything come into being, Bhutadi, who is before everything in this world, Sambhava, who brings into being. Anyone know a verse from Bhagavad Gita? Sambhavam yuga yuga, yeah, but I'm thinking of he himself comes with, that's the next one, Prabhava I'm thinking of. Aham sarvasya prabhavaha. That name's also come in this Vishnu Sahasranama. So it means the same thing. I bring everything into being. How does Srila Prabhupada translate that? I am the creator of all material, and I'm the origin of all material and spiritual world. Vishvareta, which means the origin of the universe. Reta means semen. Sarvadi, who is before. So the meaning comes up again and again and again in different ways. Name 552 is Svanga. Svanga. So Sva means, what does that mean? It comes up commonly. Svatantra, Swarupa.
Of oneself.
Means of oneself, yeah. Om. And Anga means body. Sometimes it can mean a part of the body. It can mean a part. Sometimes it means body, and it can also mean a part. Just like, for instance, there are many, many usages of the word Anga. We have the Bhaktiangas, the different parts or processes of devotional service. Or Sharanga Sharanagati, the six Angas of the process of taking shelter of Krishna. So this name is a synonym for Swarupa. You know the word synonym? You got that? Okay. How do you say in Telugu? No, it's not Bahuvachanam. It's what's the word? It has the same meaning. Yeah. So it's a synonym of Swarupa. Now this is very important to understand. because we are in this material existence, our body, or what we consider to be our body, we are different from that. Therefore we have in Bhagavad Gita, Dehino Sminyata Dehe. You have the words Dehin or Dehi and Deha. They're different. We're different from this body. But in the case of the Supreme Lord, Deha Dehi Vibedho Yam Neshvare Vidyate Kvachit. The Supreme Lord is never to be considered different from his body. And therefore the apparent contradiction in the verse, Ajopi Sanavya Yatma Bhutanam Ishwaropi San Prakritim Swamadishtaya Sambhavam Atma Maya. Krishna says there's apparent contradiction in this, isn't there? That I'm unborn, my transcendental form never deteriorates. I'm the Supreme Lord of all living beings, but still I appear within this material nature by my... I come into being, sambhavami. I come into being by my own maya, by my own energy or mercy or illusion. Here maya can have these meanings. So what does it mean? He's unborn, but sambhava, he's born. How is it understood? It's understood that he's not different from his body. So when he says he's born, it's to be understood in a special case. So all this has to be understood through the Vaishnava Acharyas. Otherwise it'll just seem to be some kind of mumbo jumbo. I'm not born, but I'm born. Yeah, well, it doesn't make any sense, because if you're not born, then you can't be born, and if you're born, then you can't be not born. You're either born or you're not born. You can't be both. But in Krishna's case, it is possible that he is unborn, but he appears to take birth. Goes through all the motions of taking birth. Devaki becomes pregnant. Therefore we have in the second chapter of the 10th canto of Bhagavatam, the Deva Stuti. The demigods come to pray to Krishna within the womb of Devaki. She was pregnant, everyone knew, they're waiting. Is this going to be the eighth child who's going to kill me? The eighth, Kamsa was thinking. And so she had all the symptoms of pregnancy. And then, of course, Krishna was born with manifesting four arms and with an opulent Narayan form, so that's unusual. But he went through, he was born in one sense, in another sense, not born. So his form is very different from material forms, and actually our original form as eternal servants of Krishna is also very different from this present body that we are inhabiting, which is made of skin and bones and blood and pus and stool and urine and organs and so many unpleasant things. But the spiritual body, like that of the Supreme Lord, is Satchit Anandamai, eternal, composed of eternality, bliss, and knowledge. So Krishna, he's always situated in his spiritual form. He never has a material form. So this is very important to understand, essential to understand. This is this Bhagavat Tattva Vijnana. This is the science of knowledge, of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that he is He is his body. He's non-different. His Satchitananda Vigraha is himself. But that also means that he is self-sustained. Our body, just like this previous name, Vedha, needs providing for. We need the gifts of nature, the gift of God, the gifts of God, light, air, water, food. But Krishna is self-supporting. He doesn't need anything. Whatever there is anyway is only produced from him. But he's not in need of anything as we are. He supports everyone, but he's not in need of support by anyone. He creates everything from himself. But he himself is not created. Now that brings us to one of the meanings here, that he is both the instrumental and the material cause of this world. In other words, he is the... these are terms used in logic and understood in Western philosophy also. The Western philosophers have analyzed. Upadan karan, the material or ingredient cause, and the nimitta karan. So the common example given of this, of causation, much of philosophy is concerned with trying to understand causation. How even modern science, how did this world that we live in, how did it all get here with all the planets and the stars and at the macrocosmic level, at the microcosmic level, we're not exactly sure what's going on. We're not exactly sure what's going on at the macrocosmic level or in between either, but whatever's going on, it's something amazing. So how did it all come into being? That question is asked by modern scientists, and many of them have come to the conclusion that there was a Big Bang. There was a Big Bang, and then everything expanded, and then it all settled down a little bit, and gradually it all came about so that we're here now. So they're also interested in causation. What are we doing? What's the origin of everything? Now, the example given, simple example given, if we say what is the cause, it's given of a clay pot, which is an everyday object in all over the world. It used to be. There's a clay pot there. Used to be all over the world. Nowadays, there's more plastic and things like that. But clay pots, pretty much all over the world, in most places, maybe not in the Eskimo society, but in most places, even in Europe, it used to be. The potter had an important function. So what is the cause of the pot? Yeah, what's the word you say? Mattika? Mati. What's that? No, but you're going ahead. The pot. What is the cause of the pot? You're giving the answer. The cause is the clay. Without the clay, there can't be any pot. But it also, another cause is the potter. Because the clay will sit there for any millions of years and it won't become a pot unless there's a potter. And they have to know which, it's not any clay you can make into a pot. You need a specific kind of clay, and you have to know how to mold it, knead it, just the right amount of water. Then you have to know how to spin it on a potter's wheel and make it in such a way that it's perfectly balanced, and then you have to fire it in an oven. If you don't have the right kind of clay, if you have too much water or not enough water,
or
the temperature isn't right, then it won't fire properly. It may crack in the fire itself. So it is, some expertise is required to make pots. And especially if you want to glaze it, that means to put the decoration on the outside. That's another level. So the cause is the mud, and the cause is also the potter. So the upadan karan, the ingredient cause, is the mud or the clay, and the nimitta karan, the instrumental cause, is the potter. And you could suggest other causes also. Why does the potter make the pot? Because he makes his income like that, and this way he feeds himself and his family. And why pots? Well, people want pots for storing water, for storing rice grains, and for so many reasons they may want pots. So you can say the cause of the pot is the need for having a container to hold water. The cause of the pot is the potter's need to maintain his family, and so on and so on and so on. Why does the householder want a pot to store water? Because he needs to drink water. Why does he need to drink water? Well, without that he'll feel very uncomfortable and eventually die. Why will he die? Because the body, and you go on and on and on like this, and you come to Sarva Karana Karanam, the cause of all causes is Krishna. But he is not caused, and that's another meaning of Svanga. He's the cause of everything, both instrumental and, well, first of all, we should say, logically speaking, we should say he is the ingredient cause and the instrumental cause. The technical terms are upadan karana and nimitta karana. So he's both. The material cosmos, everything in it comes from him. It's all his energy. As we know from Bhagavad Gita, what's the verse any of our Gurukul boys can say? This material ingredients are all Krishna's energies. Anyone can say? Bhumir. Can you say? But you should say without me prompting you. You should know. Anyway, now you know to say. Say it. Bhumir apo nalo vayo kangmano buddhire vacha ahankara iti yangme bhinna prakriti ashtadha. So this is Krishna's, this earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence and false ego is Krishna's separated energy, prakriti or shakti. So, shakti, shakti matara veda. The energy and the energetic are in one sense non-different. Because the energy cannot exist without the energetic. So in one sense, this whole material cosmos is Krishna. It's his expanded energy. So in that sense, Krishna is the cause of everything. And Sa Aikshata, by his glancing, he brings the whole universe into being. Maya Dhyakshena Prakriti Suyate Sacharachara Hetunanena Kaunteya Jagadvi Parivartate. By his overseeing the whole universe with moving and non-moving beings within it, it's all running on. Aham sarvasya prabhavaha matas sarvang pravartate. Everything emanates from him. So he's the cause of everything, both as instrumental cause and both as the ingredient cause, instrumental cause. Then another meaning of svanga. Sva-anga can also mean su-anga. Su means very nice, very beautiful. Krishna is very beautiful. Yang Shyama Sundaram Achintya Guna Swarupam. There are so many descriptions of his beautiful form. Within the Bhagavatam, there's so many descriptions of his beautiful form. Srila Prabhupada, I'm just taking one description from Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada here speaking spontaneously. It's from a conversation of Srila Prabhupada. He said, Krishna is the most beautiful. Because Krishna is beautiful, even the chirping of a bird is beautiful. He's the source of all beauty. Krishna is the reservoir of all pleasure and beauty. Beauty is appreciated in the world because beauty is one of Krishna's qualities. So why do we find something beautiful? That's a reflection of the beauty of Krishna. Whatever little beauty we find in this material world is but the perverted reflection of Krishna's beauty. Now, another meaning of Svanga is that he has intrinsically the marks of sovereignty. In other words, means Raja Chinna. He has his body is just exactly like that of a king. Very powerful, well proportioned, and of course, specifically Krishna has marks on his lotus feet. There's the science of physiognomy by which one can identify what is the character of a person just by seeing their bodily form. There are certain things you can say. If the eyebrows are joined together, not a good sign. For instance, if the arms are very long, ajanu lambata bhuja, there's long down to the knees, that's a sign of a very great personality. So Krishna has all the marks of a king upon his body. And specifically, Krishna has certain features which are unique to himself. Namely, he has the Srivatsa, the mark on his chest, a curl of hair, which is actually Lakshmi taking shelter on his chest on that way. And also, to be understood, someone may be a king in this life, so he may have the marks of sovereignty. When a king is in his court or he's going on the way, there'll be a parasol held above his head. Parasol is chhatra. Chhatra in modern Hindi. He has special shoes. Chamara. These are all signs of kingship. They're offered to kings. In Vedic culture, you can't use it. Anyone can have a hand fan. But chamara, that is for kings. So who's a king? There'll be a king in this life and probably not in the next life. But Krishna has all these kingly, all this kingly paraphernalia always, because it actually belongs to him. And Ananta Shesha, he expands himself into so many forms to serve the Lord. So it's with him always. Just like Krishna, his form is always existing. Ananta Shesha is always existing. And Ananta expands himself into so many forms to serve the Lord. So that is eternal. The king in this world is a representative of Krishna. Narana chandaradhipam, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. Among men I am the king. But although he is to be recognized or honored as the Supreme Lord, a representative of the Supreme Lord, Naradeva, God among men. But sometimes we understood he's only temporarily in that position, whereas Krishna's always in that position because he's Svanga. Baladev Vidyabhushan, he gives the meaning for this name that he's the original teacher of Vedic knowledge. Which is also, the Vedic knowledge is also non-different from him because it emanates from his body. The Vedas, they emanate from the breathing of Narayana. So the Vedas are non-different from him. Oh, I forgot to say Baladev's explanation of the previous name, that he appointed the various demigods and gave them their respective duties. So in this way he provides for others also. Another understanding of Svanga is that he moves by himself. Other living beings can move because he gives them the life to move. But he's self-sufficient. He moves on his own power. Everyone in this world is moving on his power, but his power is his, so he moves on his own power. When the Atma leaves the body becomes immobile. But that never happens with Krishna. There's no question of it. So he is self-moving, you can say. Okay, I'll finish there for now. Any question? Please. Oh, all right then. Hare Krishna. Ah, yeah. Dehi deha vibhedo yam neshvare vidyate krachit. It's from Kurma Purana. It's quoted in Srila Prabhupada's Gita commentary. And it's quoted as a verse in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. I believe that's in the 7th chapter of the Adilila. It's in one of his... I believe that's in the 7th chapter of Adilila. With one of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's discussions with the Mayavadis. So that means either Prakashananda or Sarvabhauma. But I'm not sure which one. Maybe it's Sarvabhauma. I can't remember now. No, it's not in the 7th chapter. And that'll be the discussion with Sarvabhauma. Hare Krishna. All glories to His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada.